And now from the scholar's version of 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If I were fluent in human and heavenly tongues, but lacked love, I'd sound like a hollow gong or a crashing cymbal. If I could interpret oracles, had the key to all the sacred rites and secrets and every insight, if I had all the confidence in the world to move mountains, but lacked love, I'd be nothing. If I parted with all that I owned, if I offered my body to the sacrificial flames, but lacked love, it would do me no good. Love takes its time, makes itself good and useful. Love doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, it doesn't bluster. It doesn't make a scene. It doesn't look after its own interests. It doesn't throw fits. It doesn't dwell on the negative. It takes no pleasure in injustice, but is delighted by the truth. Love upholds everything, trusts in everything, hopes for everything, endures everything. Love never falls away, though oracles will cease, tongues will fall silent, insight will fall short. We know bits and pieces, in bits and pieces we deliver oracles. But when the whole picture emerges, bits and pieces will disappear. When I was very young, I talked like a child, thought like a child, reasoned like a child. When I grew up, I put an end to childish ways. Now we look at a reflection quite obscure, then we'll gaze face to face. Now I know only bits and pieces, then I shall know as I am known. So then, confidence, hope, love, these three endure. But the greatest of these is love.
You might be able to tell by looking at the bulletin and hearing what we've done so far, that the theme is love. And I want to make a point today that art and love are very closely linked together. And to celebrate that, I want to, and you know that by how much love the people who put this together have. And so I want to thank some people, first of all. I want to congratulate the winners of the Beaverton Arts Foundation Scholarships, Cody Stoltz and Tessa Plum and Megan Bauman. And if there are any of you, any artists here who have contributed to the show this year, I invite you to, would you please stand? There we go. Yeah. And stay up there if you would, just for a second, because I'm going to invite some folks to join you. I'm going to ask also the art show committee, those who put this thing, organized it all together. Please, thank you. And while they're standing, I'm going to invite anybody else who wore a security badge or who took money in the financial part or who carried boxes in and out or moved chairs around or who had anything at all to do with this art show. Please stand. Thank you. Thank you all very much. This art show and celebration of creativity has been going on for 40 years. A friend of mine, Sarah Sanderson Dowdy, who is now the pastor at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church, was actually the minister who followed me when I was in my first church in upstate New York. Anyway, she came to the art show. She's been recently installed as minister at St. Andrew's. And she said, 40 years? Gosh, I was only 1 year old. There you go. 40 years. That's very exciting. And for 40 years, this congregation, Southminster, has been wanting to celebrate the arts and celebrate artists and celebrate appreciators of art. And that's a very important thing to do because, you know, religion always has had a little bit of a shaky relationship with artists. And I'm talking about organized religion. I'll speak Presbyterians. The Presbyterian chapel at Princeton Seminary, where I went to seminary, doesn't have any artwork in it at all. It is very white and pillared and Federalist, and that's been the style. It's been there's an aspect that somehow making art or icons would get you in the way of God. I think this art show and those who engage in art show the exact opposite, that actually art itself it can be a vehicle to the sacred and to the spirit. And so it's in that aspect that we respect. And we remember that the first image, the first things that human beings used to do when they wanted to connect with the sacred, whether it was burying the dead or celebrating some kind of life, was sculpture and art. And those are the first aspects of religious fervor and reverence. And so we see that today. As you ask an artist, what do you mean by all that? And they may all get kind of embarrassed about it. But we as appreciators of art can see in the various, whether it's a painting or an acrylic or a statue or whatever art might be, even folk art. This is fine art. This is a fine art show. Jewelry. All of that can show the sense of the muse, of the spirit, of the power of life and faith and hope. And so I want to talk with you this morning, not long, but I want to talk with you about what I think is the connection between the three basic virtues of faith that were read in the letter in 1 Corinthians today, faith, hope, and love, and how art can be a vehicle for bringing that out. And it's also going to be a bit of a pointed thing because I believe sometimes there is an aspect of, you tell me what the word is, our culture that wants to put art as kind of a secondary thing. And we see it in the way we make our budgets. I'd love to have the Pentagon have a bake sale to pay for their products. Or our school systems, you know, to recognize, hopefully they're coming around to that, but art and music as an essential aspect of being human, and as essential aspect of our education. We must, I believe, resist attempts to turn us into robots. And I'm thinking of the late Robin Williams, member of the film Dead Poets Society, and he's talking to all these young men, in this case, private school folks who will probably grow up to be financiers and engineers and whatever, college presidents, and he's saying, you know, you build bridges that you're being trained for, but why are you building the bridges? For poetry. And he reads them poetry, and it's the first time that it's read to them with feeling, that it's read to them in such a way that touches the heart and brings out the passions of life itself. That's why we do all this stuff. We do this stuff for our relationships, for living our short span of life with a sense of humanity, with a sense of belonging, with a sense of love and life. Julia did a beautiful job of reading the scripture of 1 Corinthians 13 from the scholar's version of Paul. Just a quick thing about it. It's from this book, The Authentic Letters of Paul, by Westar Institute or the Jesus Seminar. And it's a beautiful translation. If you've ever, like I have, ever found Paul to be just a little dry and pedantic, kind of a bummer at parties, then I'd invite you to check out this translation. It really kind of puts him in context. And it's also the authentic letters of Paul. Not everything attributed to Paul in the Bible is necessarily written by Paul, say, the scholars. And so that's important to know, to kind of weed out some of the folks who, you know, kind of piled on Paul to give their own agenda. And so separating that out. One of the scholarly arguments is whether or not even this letter of Paul, this famous chapter on love, really is from Paul. I want to credit it to Paul because he just gets such a bum rap otherwise. I want to give him something nice, but it's possible that his grammar and all of that stuff it could have been an insert that Paul himself put in the letters. It looks like it's something written earlier, or it could have been one of the scribes who put that in. Nonetheless, it certainly does talk about three essential aspects of faith. Reinhold Niebuhr, in his book, The Irony of American History, wrote this. He said, "That's nothing that's worth doing can be achieved in our lifetime. Therefore, we must be saved by hope. Nothing which is true or beautiful or good makes any complete sense in history. in the immediate context of history, that is. Therefore, we must be saved by faith. And nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we must be saved by love. And let Reinhold Niebuhr be a lens through which we look at this passage from Paul's letter to the Corinthians, chapter 13, the love passage, and its beautiful language. Paul isn't downing hope or faith when he's lifting up love as the one that is the greatest. They're all great, but there is one that's the greatest, and that's what he calls is love. And so when we think of faith, when we think of trust, you have to trust when you're making a piece of art that this is going to be real. And who was it as I hear the story? John Money. John Money now lives in Salem. He is a contributor for many years. How many years was that he contributed? A dozen? More than that? I'm getting this third hand, but he told a story about to the children that when he was at a school, I believe he was talking with a school, and when he does a piece of art, if he doesn't like it, he just throws it under the bed. And then he may come back to it and pull it out and see whether it is, but it's okay if he puts it under the bed. In other words, he has to have a sense of trust that the piece of art that he is going to create is going to communicate something that's real and honest and what he wants to communicate. That's how I think of that. So creating art and living life, which I believe are the same things, have to have a sense of trust about it. You have to know, even before you calculate things, that whatever it is we are creating in life is going to be something that is beautiful and that is good and that will contribute, at least whatever it might be, whether it's even just a sense of pleasure and enjoyment or a prophetic statement, whatever that is, it takes that faith. And as Niebuhr said, nothing which is true or beautiful or good makes complete sense immediate and inimmediate context of history. Therefore, we must be saved by faith. He also said, nothing that's worth doing can be achieved in our lifetime. Therefore, we must be saved by hope. And so all of the good works that we do, all of the plans that we have, all of the energy that we put into things, it's going to happen after we go. And that is a bummer for the ego, because we'd like to be around to get the applause for it. But if it's really something that is going to change the world for good, it's something that we didn't invent in the first place, likely. That we stand, of course, on the shoulders of people before us. And then there's a sense of beautiful humility to that, that hope is that which we know whatever is going to come of this world. And I have a hope. I have a hope the next revolution will be peaceful. That there will be a way in which nonviolent relationships with one another will ultimately not just seem like some crazy liberal person's idea, but it will actually be the way that we practically work together as human beings in creating a life on earth for now and for future generations. And so that's my hope, but it's not likely to come true in my lifetime. So I stand on the shoulders of all of those who've worked before, and we work together to create this sense of hope for our future. And finally, love. And this is really what I think is the creative act itself. The creative act of life has to do with love, and that is the connection that we have with one another. It is love is, we talk about love a lot. You hear the word a lot, but love, at least according to St. Paul and all of the beautiful descriptions that Julie read about love, it has to do with the connection that we have. Whether that connection is with other Homo sapiens or with other species of Earth, whether it's plant or life or whatever it might be, that love, which is that which calls us together, an intimate relationship, love, that is more powerful than forces that destroy that. And so it's out of love. It's love that will help us as human beings live together with each other, live together regardless of what we look like or what language we speak or what values that we have in terms of art. You know, the biggest deal about religion and art I said earlier that why religion doesn't like art oftentimes and has had other iconoclastic strain through it. It isn't that it doesn't like art, it just doesn't like other people's art. That's at the bottom end of it. It's a lack of understanding where art comes from in a different culture. And so once we recognize that art may not necessarily aesthetically grab us, it's because we haven't spent enough time with it, or we haven't spent enough time with those who've created it. And that is the act of love, and that is the beauty of the artist, because we all have the artist within us to make our creation, to share that with one another, and to be the example of love for ourselves, for our family, for the community, for the human race. One final thing from that quote from Reinhold Niebuhr. This is his final statement. This is often forgotten. We usually read the first three, but then he has a fourth one, and it says, "No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as it is from our standpoint. Therefore, we must be saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness." And that, I think, and the negative example, you just watch TV and watch the politicians, how many of them ever sincerely offer forgiveness? It's what's lacking. It's what's lacking in political discourse. Actually admitting to whatever it is that we did wrong and simply saying, "I did this wrong," without a whole string of excuses behind it. Just saying, "I've done this and this is a mistake," and taking whatever might be from that is often difficult to find. And so that's why it's such the virtuous act itself, is being able to do that and forgive others, because at the end of the day, whatever it is that anybody does, we can do the same thing, and we may have done the same thing. And so forgiveness is that ultimate act of love. And that I too see in the work of art. I'm just amazed. I want to give you a second, because I need a second. Just look at this. These paintings that are, I don't even want to talk, because I just want to look at them. There's life here, right? From animals to plants to human beings to emotions. They make us feel things that we can't describe. There's music. I can't help but think of My Beautiful Bride right here, and others. She's the musician. It fills the heart. It's the reason for life, if I can say it that boldly, that we create and we make art, whether we do it in the fine art way or whether we do it in our folk art way or whatever it is, we are creators. And that, in essence, is what will keep us as human beings alive and thriving now and into our future. Thank you all for being creators. Amen.
Speak in the tongues of men and of angels.